When you think about the word caring, I always liken it to a healthcare worker, a nurse or a doctor, where they're coming into your room or you're coming into their office and they want to know how they can help you feel better, how they can help you with the problems that you're having. That's a deeper idea than serving. So you wouldn't go into a restaurant and expect the waiter to come up and help you with your diet too much by caring about what you're eating. Equally, you wouldn't expect a nurse or a doctor in a hospital to come in with his menu of surgeries that he can do on you tomorrow and say, well, why don't you pick one because I'm here to serve you. The two ideas are different. And we're talking about caring about people and caring about mission as opposed to only serving. That's why it's beyond servant leadership.
Hi, and welcome to the Sunday Lunch Project Manager podcast for Sunday, the 22nd of October, 2023. This is your host, Nigel Creasy, and this week we've got the second part of my interview with Bob de Kock and Phil Clampett, the Leading with Care guys. So enjoy. So if you're listening to this, that means you've had a week's gap from episode one, part one, which means that you've had a week where you've been wondering what on earth was going to be said next in the next pieces, wondering what other nuggets of information were coming from my guest. And you've had a week where you haven't been able to apply those nuggets because you didn't know they existed or what they were, which is a little bit frustrating, really, because imagine how much more efficient, productive, are amazing you could have been. But you know there's a way around it. You know that you can pop along to Patreon, www.patreon.com/SundayLunchPM, or to Spotify, have a look at the feed, and there's a little lock. Click on the lock and it'll ask you to pay. It's price for coffee. That's it. A month. And you'll get everything a week early. And you won't have bits like this. In it with me wittering on about becoming a patron and things like that. So have a think. And anyway, I'll shut up now because you're probably thinking, just get on with it, Nigel. So yeah, here's the second part of the show. Hi, and this is just a quick one. Last week you didn't get any intros or outros or any of that stuff. And yeah, apologies, or maybe you were glad of it, I'm not sure. I had some technical problems, so I thought I'd just drop in here and say, explain why. And hopefully, service returns to normal from now on. Speak soon. So I have a number of sponsors, affiliate links, in the way that it's set up, that have kindly allowed me to share their services, really. The first one is Mike Clayton, and Mike runs PM online PM courses, and it is a great resource for getting those fundamentals of project management trained, reasonably priced, and Mike presents it in an accessible and clear manner. You can check out some of his videos on his YouTube channel and kind of give you a view of where they are. But the code for that, if you go to nigelcreasy.com/onlinepmcourses, all one word, lowercase, that'll redirect you to it. There's varying different levels that you can buy. You can buy individual courses, you can buy pathways as well, if you like. And I get a kickback off those. Mike kindly shares me that. So if you do jump on and use it, I hope you find it really useful. I think he has money back guarantees and things like that as well, so there's very limited risk on that. So jump on that, and that again, it's nigelcreese.com/onlinepmcourses, and enjoy.
It's sort of what happens in a lot of organizations, kind of a plug and play type of hiring. Yeah. I'm putting somebody in and we want them to play a certain role. And I think what we're advocating is more like, let's develop. We'll plug you into a position, but plug and develop. And then see what kind of cool new ideas you can come up with. And from my own experience of training a lot of faculty members at the university, the hardest thing to train them to do is kind of what you just talked about, because they come in, like I did, you know, very well-educated about a particular subject, and they want to gear it at a very high level. And they think because they're enthusiastic about the topic or whatever at a very high level, they're going to engage undergraduate and even graduate students at that level. And the hardest thing to train them to do, and it really takes trial and error, is to say, you got to meet them where they're at. You got to meet the students where they're at. And if they're not going to be where you're at, despite your enthusiasm, I'm a very enthusiastic person, despite your expertise, despite, you know, all this other stuff, you got to move it down in a way. I'm not saying dumb down the material, but link it to a way that's in their world and allow them to flourish and develop so they can get up to your level.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, it's I can see how that kind of draws alongside as well with the team members and bringing team members through. And I know that when I've worked with people who I've needed to coach through, I'll have a team of five different people maybe, and I don't coach them all the same. I don't just apply the same. I mean, some of them I'll be a bit more brutal with, saying, well, you're better than that. Some of them it'll be, okay, arm around the shoulder, because it's what they need, or I perceive they need. I'm not always going to be right. It's going to be sometimes I'll get it wrong. We all get it wrong because we misjudge things. But I think I like that meet them where they are. It's working out where people are and adjust as you're doing. I suppose I wonder how, with all these different things there around, the concept of servant leadership, and I think I mentioned to you guys earlier that I've heard the phrase servant leadership. I can't think when I first heard it, but the first time I heard it, I thought, what's that mean? And I've never really got a really good definition since. I've not done a lot of research, and I've got a perception of what I think it means and how I kind of apply it. But do one of you want to just give me, within the context of what your book and your view of that, of what that, because I think we're going to that point, is it that what is that servant leadership? What does it mean?
Well, when we started writing this book, we started by, one of the places we started is reading the original servant leadership book. And we went back and studied it. And we reflected and compared that to the numbers and statistics we were getting about engagement. And clearly there was a disconnect between the two, because clearly that servant leadership has been around for 20, 30 years or so. And you read the book and you go, yeah. It all makes sense. And this is all, viscerally feels like it's the right thing. But then you start delving into it and say, well, how can we help this and take this to the next level? And I would argue that there are two problems that have occurred as a result of the servant leadership approach. And it's not an indictment of a servant leadership, but the first problem is that people will read something like servant leadership and they won't have the skill set to actually implement it. And there's not a lot of talk about that. And you can't just get the skill set and the competencies through, you know, hearing stories. You have to have something concrete. And one of the chapters that Bob and I discussed the most was about performance. And I realized, looking back at some of the people I have coached, I made the mistake of not being specific enough, because my bias is to be much more open and let people explore. So you got that as one bucket of problems. The other bucket of problems I've seen a lot where people have acquired one of the skills of servant leadership, like how to collaborate or ask questions, but don't have the underlying beliefs that are associated with it. So we have people that, what I would call a faux collaboration. They ask questions, they ask for engagement, but at the end of the day, they think they have all the answers. And so they don't embrace uncertainty, which is really the core tenet of collaboration. And so what we try to do is, and what we wrestled with is to integrating those core beliefs with those core practices and addressing those two problems. First, for the person who doesn't know how to implement leadership at this level. And then the second one, and for people who may be doing some of the right things, but really don't have the underlying sensibilities and beliefs that they need to really get the power out of leading with care.
Yeah, and you know, in positioning the book, when we say beyond servant leadership, it's just what Phil said. There's a servancy enough. Servancy alone is not enough. And that's how we came to the word care, because we think the word care is a deeper idea than service. Because the original work from Greenleaf on servancy says, you know, you're going to serve people first. And I think some of the wrong track kind of thinking that gets embraced there is that it's only about serving people. Well, leadership is about serving the mission of the organization as well. You can't just serve people and forget about what you're in business for, or if it's not a profit business, what the organization is for. So it's serving people and the mission. And then the idea of serving is, you know, think about where you find the word service. Well, you find the word service in a restaurant. A customer comes in and get invited to a table, and a server comes up and, can I get you a drink, sir? Or here's the menu. What would you like tonight? When you think about the word caring, I always liken it to a healthcare worker, a nurse or a doctor, where they're coming into your room or you're coming into their office and they want to know how they can help you feel better, how they can help you with the problems that you're having. That's a deeper idea than serving. So you wouldn't go into a restaurant and expect the waiter to come up and help you with your diet too much by caring about what you're eating. Equally, you wouldn't expect a nurse or a doctor in a hospital to come in with his menu of surgeries that he can do on you tomorrow and say, well, why don't you pick one because I'm here to serve you. The two ideas are different. And we're talking about caring about people and caring about mission as opposed to only serving. That's why it's beyond servant leadership.
That's, yeah, I get that. It's really, yeah, because that I've struggled with that servant leadership concept a bit on the basis of, and maybe it's me not going into it as well, and it probably doesn't say it like this, but I always assumed it was kind of like, you're just there to help the person. That's it. And like you say, with the restaurant, that's where, in many restaurants, that's what you're there. You're there to get the person to come back, make sure they get the food. That's it. Done, dusted. And the same with the healthcare side of it, you've got that flip side, as you said. And you kind of think about scenarios where organizations who serve their customers and in that customer scenario and go beyond the transaction and go beyond the, this is, you give me this, I give you that. There you go. I'm your sir. You ask me what you want, I'll sort you. Where they actually deliver the service goes above and beyond. My brother-in-law's and sister-in-law run a restaurant, and I can see this with them a lot of the time, is that they want the person there to have the best time they can, to have that evening. If someone's coming out to celebrate something, it's not about just doing what they ask. It's to make sure they have the best evening, and even if it's to the point where it's towards the end, even saying, you probably shouldn't have another drink. You've had enough because you might fall down a pothole when you're on the way home. And that kind of caring where you would Whereas normally you just go serve, whatever. And I think that's that. The way that you described it there, it kind of gives me that little illustration of it.
And it applies. It applies to many professions, right?
Yeah.
Going beyond.
Yeah.
It's beyond the service. It's caring about what you're doing and making sure the people on the receiving end realize it and feel it. Not realize it, feel it.
Yeah.
And want to come back.
It reminds me of the Southwest Airlines story. The book that I read about that, and I can't remember the name of the guy who ran, is it Southwest Airlines in the US? And there was very much their drive with all of their organization was that the customer has they care about the customer rather than just ship them through, serve them, get them out the door at the other end. Oh, I don't know if that's changed, but it was from back in the 80s or something like that.
It's Kellner, right?
That's it. That struck me as that echoes with that sort of stuff. So how do we? I'm just thinking. I'm a project manager. There's people listening to this who are managers there, and the tough world. It is a tough world. It's got tougher, especially with the pandemic, things like that. And I think that tough world that we're in, and gather your opinion on this as well, is it's getting tougher from a point of view of uncertainty. And that's where I think the toughness comes of it, of knowing what's next and the need to be able to react and the need to be able to learn something new. What do you, maybe it's in the book, bits in the book you can pull out of it. What do you see as the actionable items of leading with care? What are the things that people need to do? I guess people have to care to start off with, because if you don't care about the people you're leading, then you're going to struggle to lead with care. But how do you do that?
Well, yeah. So the book, that's exactly the premise of the book, the purpose of the book. In the first part of the book, we talk about five core beliefs. And the beliefs need to be there as a basis for how you think. And the five beliefs are, in caring leaders embrace uncertainty well. They don't have to have all the answers. Caring leaders need to make progress. They need to move the ball. Caring leaders have to live a set of values that everybody understands, that they're trustworthy and honest and respectful and, you know, we have nine values. Caring leaders are learning their whole life long, and they need to dedicate themselves to continuing to learn, because of all the professions that you can name, I think we do the worst job of all, training and preparing people to be good leaders. We prepare them to be managers to some extent in business schools by teaching them the technical parts of finance and marketing and HR and all that stuff. But to lead and training them how to lead people, not so much. And that's what we have to do a better job of. And then the fifth belief is
be kind but not soft.
So caring leaders have an attitude of being kind. That doesn't mean they're soft. They have to make hard decisions. So you have to have a set of beliefs. And then the second part of the book, and we won't get into all nine of them, talks about nine practices: communications, relationship building, bringing out new ideas in people, handling pushback, nine practices that when you have the beliefs, you have to have a set of practices, and the practices reinforce the beliefs, and the beliefs underpin the practices. And it's a system. The book is a system of suggestions on how to believe and practice about how leaders need to care. And that's what the book is all about.
From a practical standpoint, Nigel, I think it is like, I always think of it as a lattice of interconnected skills. And what tends to happen, and I've been in academia for quite a while, and I've read almost as many leadership books as I can handle, and what tends to happen is they tend to focus on a narrow slice of the leadership puzzle without talking about how to integrate all the various aspects and how they build on each other. and there's a lattice of skills, and they reinforce one another. And so what we tried to do is to isolate the 9 or 10 things that we thought were skills and practices that all leaders, almost regardless of style, need to master and interlace into their leadership style. Otherwise, they're not going to be as successful as they would like, and their organization to be as successful as they like. And so I think of it as a group of skills and a group of practices that link up together. So, for example, one of the skills is to robustly communicate. Well, that's one direction. But the flip side of it is you have to learn how to manage pushback. So it's an interlaced skill. You can't just learn one skill at the expense of another. So you may have somebody who's a great public speaker, but that's not enough to be a great communicator. And so you need other skill sets to interlace with that. And one of the geniuses of kind of Bob's leadership style, and I think of the book, has been to talk about the way those things are linked together.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it does, I suppose it depends over time as well, and depending on the number of people you're leading or the complexities you'll get through your career, you can kind of fake it a little bit, can't you? You can rely on that one skill, whether that be that robust communication. You might be really good at telling people what to say. You might be good at being a good orator, and you can build a career on that. But there's a point where that alone, it's like kind of, as you say, going up a ladder. You could be at the top of a ladder, and if you've only got one ladder, it becomes wobbly towards the top, doesn't it? But you need more support around it, and that's where. But it gradually can seem like you're doing okay with just that one trick in your book or trick in your pack, if you like.
I've seen it. We've seen it many, many, many times where somebody rises on the basis of maybe one leadership skill or even one technical skill. And then they get in a position where, you know, the environment demands much more, and they don't have this collection and interlaced set of skills that they need to be successful. And so much of the coaching that Bob does and I do with executives has been around making sure those things are linked up in a way that mutually reinforce rather than undermine each other.
The other thing we did in the book, which we think is pretty cool, is at the end of each chapter in both parts, we either list a short series of either reflective questions, or in the second part, a book of self-assessing questions that you can use to self-assess key questions about what level of skill are you at with this practice, or what level are you at with this belief in your way you think about things. And you can do that yourself if you're self-reflective enough, or you can use it with a peer group or a 360 kind of a group, so that you're not deceiving yourself as to how you're coming across. Because a lot of these things, it doesn't matter. You know, you can say, well, am I honest? You say, oh, of course I'm honest. But if none of the people think you're honest, then you're probably not honest, right? And so
You may be honest, but you may not be appearing to be honest, isn't it? That's the thing, isn't it? It's the way you're going about stuff. You might be completely honest, but if you're not communicating in a clear and concise way to people about stuff, right, people will attribute dishonesty to that because they're not convinced.
Yes, yep. And if you don't respond to that, if you're not listening to that and changing as a result of it, you're on the way to a train wreck. And that's really something that is not talked about very much in leadership literature and leadership training. It needs to be.
Yeah. I think 360, the 360 assessments that I've had, I've found really valuable over the years. And yeah, from way back at different times, I've been having them. And from I thought I was good at that, and, oh, people think I'm good at that, kind of things when you pick these up. And it's kind of, they are really eye-opening, especially you've got people who you know you can trust, and you people who and it's nicely anonymized and all that, so you get a real clear input into it. I think it's really powerful because it is difficult. You've got both rose-tinted spectacles about how good you are at certain things. And also you can be very down imposter syndrome driven on things that you may be really good at. It's a human trait, isn't it, to do. And it's weird that you can be both overly optimistic about your capabilities on certain things and completely pessimistic on other things. And they can be related to each other, but still that brain does something weird because of your experiences, because of your upbringing, because of what you've seen others do. You get influenced by those, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah.
Brilliant. This strikes me, and it's the whole topic of management and leadership is enormous, isn't it? And it's one of those things that I think is we can all get better at, and we always will be able to get better at, because I don't think we'll ever get to that point where, yeah, we know how to build a bridge now, don't we? We know how to build a bridge generally. Fair enough, you want to build them fancy in certain things, but I think there's lots of things. We know how to do a set of accounting and books and skills there. Because you've got the warm, squashy, squishy people in the world and the different mental attitudes in there, we'll never, ever get to that point where we have the set of de facto standards of what we can do. We can always just build on them, can't we, and keep going around that loop. If there was something that you would say to our listeners, because I know we're coming up on time, but if the listeners and the viewers on, from both of you actually, one from each really, what's the one thing that you would do, advise someone you were coaching, an executive, or whatever, tomorrow, to help them be better at, or lead with care in a more proactive manner?
Well, I always start with this, my favorite quote from my favorite physicist beside my father, Richard Feynman, who said, "The first principle is you must not fool yourself, and you are the easiest person to fool." And it echoes what you just said. And so if there's one thing that kind of has been a theme the last 5 or 6 minutes we've been talking, and I think it's at the core of it, is don't deceive yourself about what you're doing, and deceive yourself about your leadership style and how you're perceived. And don't deceive yourself that maybe you think you're doing one thing and maybe you have the right heart, but you don't know how to do it exactly. Yeah. And so that those types of things are where the development occurs. And so there's not one thing, because it's one thing that would be different for person one, for person two, for person three. But at the core is the belief that I've got to embrace the uncertainty of that allows me to not self-deceive. And if you can do that, you've got a road map for becoming more effective as a leader.
Brilliant.
Yeah. For me, a little similar to that, slightly different twist. I think this idea of having a level of humility about your own knowledge with the purpose of making sure that you bring out the ideas and the best in other people, because I'm continually awestruck by things that happen when you let others talk and contribute and not shut them down too early. And leaders have a tendency to do that. And that takes a strong level of humility on the part of the leader not to break in and take over the conversation.
Brilliant. Well, yeah, fantastic pieces of advice there. And I think it's, as you say, it just both of those, I think, are areas that I personally need to work on, and that we'll work on from tomorrow. Guys, it's been a fascinating, we've not even scratched the scratch on the surface of this topic. It's brilliant to have you on. And if people want to carry on the conversation, obviously they can grab a copy of the book, or do they want to get in touch? What's the best way for people to find out more from either of you?
Yeah, well, we're both active on LinkedIn, so they can reach us there. Also, our website. We have a website for the book. It's called leadingwithcare.net, altogether, leadingwithcare.net. It's a great website. They can buy the book there. It's available on all the platforms. There's videos, there's training materials that we've developed, and all of the podcasts and print media that we've done around the book are there. Nigel, as soon as you release this, you'll be on the top of the list on the website. And thank you for the time. But leadingwithcare.net is a good place to get to us and to get to more material about the book.
Brilliant. Well, guys, thank you so much for that. Was there anything we didn't cover that you would have liked to have covered before we scoot off on this?
Not for me.
No, I just think the way to think of it as is an interlaced set of skills and practices. I think that's the kind of consciousness we're going to need to get the next level of leadership. And we really tried to capture that in this book.
Brilliant. Well, guys, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. And brilliant. Hope you both have a fantastic rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Cheers, Nev. Bye. Another great sponsor of the show comes in the form of Air Manual. Air Manual is a tool for documenting process, which and best practices. It's a company formed by one of my interviewees, Alexis Kingsbury. And I kind of summarized why my view of where we see documentation, a lot of my experience has been people will document something, a process, they'll put it in a Visio diagram that gets loaded onto a SharePoint site or something similar, and then a bunch of then once that diagram's been shared with senior management, they're happy they have a process in the business. But then the detailed procedures underneath it might be with documents in just poorly kept and not linked easily and not updated. And what Air Manual does, it allows you to put in it's a tool for doing this kind of thing. You whack it in, the service in there, get in there, put in your process, your flow, and you build it down to as low a level of detail, even to the point of checklists where people can check off they've done it. So it creates that guided checklists, easy to create, easy to maintain, and all in one place. And no one's kind of rooting around to find the SharePoint. And then when you change to new SharePoint services and all that stuff, it's all there. So if you pop along to nigelcreaser.com/airmanual, there's a bit more detail there and a link there to click on to go and get. I think they offer a trial and things like that. So it's something that I think can easily reduce the amount of errors, rework, etc. within our organisation. So take a look. I know you will have really enjoyed that interview with Bob and Phil, and to both them, apologies it's taken so long to get this episode out, or these two episodes. I had some technical problems with the actual recording, where it didn't record and it overlapped and did all manner of weird things, but I managed to get hold of a backup of it and hack around with it a little bit and get it there. So hopefully it'll be worth the wait. Take care and lead with care, guys. Look after yourselves. Bye. So this is my final wrap-up. Every week you're going to hear this. You're going to get bored of it, but you can always click next podcast if so. If you have enjoyed it, if you listen to this podcast to the end of this show and you think that was great, I'd love to be able to help Nigel out, there are loads of ways you can do it. The first and obvious way is to share the podcast, send it out to people. If you know colleagues and friends who'd benefit from it, you think they'd enjoy it, just send them the link. Grab one of the links, or send them to www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. That's www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. And that will push them over to a Linktree link, and it's got all of the different ways they can consume the podcast. if you are feeling generous and have a big bag of cash, you could grab a copy of one of my books. Obviously, they're available in all the usual places, and print and digital. Again, jump on the website, www.nigelcreaser.com/shop, and that will give you a list of all the different ways that you can contribute and grab copies of the book. Also got links to all my guests' books on there as well, where I get a little bit of a kickback from them. If you are of a sporting mind, I have a number through doing some of my judo and running antics. I've managed to secure a few affiliate links and affiliates there as well. So in there, somewhere in the sponsors page, there's links to those as well. So clicking onto those and grabbing if you're looking to get super fit, then that would be fabulous as well, and I get a little kickback from those. I have a Patreon account. It's patreon.com/sundaylunchpm. So again, you can ping something in there, buy me a coffee or whatever. And finally, obviously the most important is coming back, listen again, because the more of you that come back, the more visibility I get, because there's more times that it's downloaded and all the SEO works and things like that. So yeah, that's it. So if you can help me out, I would be much appreciated. If you can't, don't worry about it. Thank you very much. Cheers now. Bye. My latest, the latest affiliate that I've got on the show now is Riverside. I use Riverside to do my interviews, Riverside FM. it kind of offers you a whole, if you like, micro studio management producer tooling, and goes beyond that. Has a really good free layer, and I've been using it for a while now. I find it really good. When I've had issues, even though I'm not on one of the higher paid levels, the support has been quick, responsive, and of high quality, and people keen to help me. The organisation seems really good. The product seems really intuitive. And quality is really good as well. And it's a clever way of doing it is when you're recording through your browsers, so you've not got loads of desktop resources being used compared to some other products that I've used. And what they also do is they do they stream a lower quality version of it up onto as you're doing the interview, so you're not burning bandwidth while you're doing the interview and potentially impacting on the quality of the conversation. And then at the end, it uploads it, the higher quality from your browser. I mean, it's just a really good way of doing it. So if you are thinking of doing a podcast, and someone's doing a podcast, I would recommend using this tool. I found it really good. Best of the tools that I've tried using to date. And you can get that at nigelcreaser.com/riverside, and that will redirect you to my kickback page on their site, and there I will get a little kickback from them. So take a look. Thanks. Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.